Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, warnings about a rise in the winter vomiting bug. We'll get advice on how to avoid it. TikTok has been banned from state devices in many countries, but some users in America are up in arms over criticisms of the social media network. We'll find out what's going on. The DUP is voting against the Stormont break. Today, we'll ask where the Windsor framework goes from here. Do you know someone who always puts the needs of others first? We'll find out why it could be a problem. We've all heard about the prospect of self-driving cars, but what about self-driving planes? We'll hear about how close they are to becoming a reality. Also today, our resident skincare expert, Dr. Rosemary Coleman, is with us. And today, Rosemary will be discussing non-invasive skincare. What is it? And does it work? If you have any questions, our text number is 51551. Email us on any of the topics we're discussing today, cb@rte.ie. And on Twitter, we're at Today with Claire. So the Dáil resumes today with the eviction ban firmly on the agenda. Speculation has increased that the government will face a tight margin when voting takes place tomorrow on the Sinn Féin motion to extend the measures. This highly emotive issue has led to divisions within the coalition and unease amongst independents, but it has also raised questions about the targets in the government's Housing for All plan and how we are preparing for the rental sector in the future. In a moment, we'll be speaking to John Cummins, Fine Gael senator and the party's housing spokesperson, and Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, Matt Carthy. But first, joining me in the studio now is Lorcan Sir, a senior lecturer in housing and real estate at the Technological University of Dublin. Lorcan, you're very welcome.
Morning.
Thanks for being here. So just let's deal with the eviction ban first and your own view on it. Is it a good idea to have it, to keep it?
Well, the interesting thing is it's not a ban on evictions per se. It's a ban on no-fault evictions, and that's a different thing entirely. So a no-fault eviction is where the tenant has been paying the rent and, you know, being an excellent tenant over the previous 5, 6, 10 years. But for other reasons, the landlord has the right to repossess the property. So in other words, the landlord's nephew or niece is coming up from Cork to go to UCD to study, you know, medicine or whatever and needs somewhere to stay. The landlord has the legal right to ask the tenant to vacate the property.
Even so as it stands?
Yeah, so through no fault of the tenant themselves, or if they need the property for themselves, or if they want to sell it. There's a whole load of reasons which are no fault. So not to do with non-payment of rent. You can always be evicted for non-payment of rent. This brings us into line with European norms, actually. It would be very normal in Europe for, you know, you can't repossess a property from under the nose of a tenant just because your niece or nephew wants somewhere to stay when they go to university. That would just be unacceptable. So first of all, it's a no-fault ban on those kind of evictions. I think politically, it's been a bit of a cluster mess, to put it politely. I think everybody was surprised when the government voted to lift it, including people who, what I would see as old school property real estate, you know, slightly, you know, slightly right of centre economist type people. Even they were surprised when the government did that. And I think it hasn't gone away, and it's going to come back. Particularly this argument around, you know, deliberately putting people, or acknowledging that we're going to have more homeless people. I think socially, if you ask people who work in homeless services, you know, from Focus and Peter McFerry and all those people who do great work, they will tell you that it's going to be a nightmare coming down the tracks for them. And their own workers suffer. You know, I know they're not at the coalface level, but their own workers, you know, see this every day. And I think economically, we have to be realistic about this. You know, a lot of the landlords who are leaving the market would be leaving anyway, because the average age of a landlord in Ireland is 60.
They've made their decision.
Their property is out of negative equity, it's paid off, they're gone. But the other thing is, it's going to affect very few landlords. You know, we make it seem like, you know, out of the 150, 160 odd thousand landlords there, that they're all wanting to sell their properties and this is stopping them doing it. It's nothing like that. You know, there's a small proportion of landlords that this will maybe have stopped for a short period of time selling their properties. But the vast majority of landlords and tenants, A, have an excellent relationship, and B, the majority of landlords aren't going to sell their properties.
So is it the right thing to lift it or not?
I don't think you should lift it until you have alternatives in place. And
right.
That involves a whole load of other aspects around legislation.
Now, Cliff Taylor was writing in the Irish Times a little while ago, posing the question, what type of rental sector do we want in this country? Do we want one that is a transitory phase on the way to home ownership, so people would only stay for a couple of years in an apartment before moving on? Or should we look at it now as a viable long-term option that people would spend their lives living in a rented property?
Well, if we're going to look at it as a viable long-term option, we shouldn't be having this row about a ban on no-fault evictions, because that is part and parcel of having a viable long-term option is renting for life. Also, the other thing is affordability. You know, nobody's asking the ESRI, in fairness, have looked at it. What is the proposition? What is the future for someone at 65 who's been on an average wage, is on a state pension and is renting with no security of tenure or limited security of tenure and can't afford the rent? So the state, the taxpayer, will end up subventing that person to help them afford to pay their rent, which may go to an international fund who pay close to zero tax here. So we might end up in that kind of really weird situation. But the answer to the question, and Sally Rooney was asking the question in the Irish Times on Saturday as well. Yeah. So the plan, if you look at the Housing for All, the government's plan, the plan is actually to produce an average of 30% of all our housing every year as private rental. Now, we're not talking about social housing or social rental or affordable or anything like that. We're just talking about the normal private rental sector. And that goes from 30% in 2022 to 40% in 2030. So that's twice as many. So the plan is to produce twice as many private rental units as houses for sale every year. This is bonkers. There are so many people in the rental sector who could afford a property or could afford a mortgage to buy if they could find one. And the problem we're having at the same time as we're planning to increase...
So the government's strategy is to pursue the rental market and to increase private tenancies in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. So at a ratio of 2-1. So two private rental properties for every private house for sale. And that's on page 32 of Housing for All, if anybody wants to have a look at that. And so you see that, and that doesn't make sense when you have such a large proportion of the people who are already renting who could afford a mortgage. But what we see then on the house building side, on the houses coming for sale, that we're averaging about 7,500 houses a year coming to the market, we'll say. You know, so out of the 29,000 built last year, only a proportion of those come to the market. Last year was 28%. In 2017, that was half. So in other words, half of all the houses that we built in Ireland came into your local estate agent's window for you to go down and have a look and buy. Last year, that was 28%. And the plan is to have twice as many rentals as houses for sale every year going forward until 2030.
So what does that do to rents? What does the government strategy do to rents?
Well, the theory is, I think, in the Custom House, that if we produce more rental properties, rents will come down. But property doesn't work like that. You know, when rents fall, when house prices fall, those providing, the builders and the landlords, stop providing. Because, you know, who builds houses when prices are falling? What landlords builds apartments for rent when rents are falling? So everything is predicated now on rising house prices and rising rents. So it never works like that. And we've seen, you know, in the last 5 years, we've seen 17,000-20,000 apartments for rent built. And have we seen rents come down? Of course we haven't seen rents come down.
So if we are increasing the number of tenancies, we're reducing, or we won't have enough social and affordable homes for people who are on housing lists, we then will be feeding into the HAP system. There'll be more and more people who will be entitled to and receiving HAP. What does that do to rents?
Well, what you have there, so what HAP is housing assistance payment, and that's where the state, for somebody who would normally have got a house from the council in the old days, the state says to them, go and find somewhere in the private rental sector and we'll pay your rent. And of course, that's competing with everybody else who's a non-HAP tenant looking for accommodation. And there's no wonder that there's so few rental properties out there to rent. And very few of them actually meet the HAP requirements because there's caps on HAP. So you have 60,000 households in the private rental sector that shouldn't be there. That's on top of all the people in the private rental sector that don't want to be there anyway or shouldn't need to be there, because if there were houses for them to buy, they'd be out buying houses. So we have a huge proportion of the private rental sector that actually shouldn't be in the private rental sector. So that begs the question then, rather than increasing the amount of private rental stock that we have, maybe our private rental sector is too large. Because we have a huge swathe of people in there that really should be somewhere else. And the question is then, you know, if we're going to have a 30% of our population renting either social or private, or 20-odd% in private, are we prepared then to provide them the security of tenure and affordability? And that all comes out of taxpayers' money to allow them to rent all their lives
so
affordably.
That strategy to pursue private rental accommodation, give more and more people HAP in order to afford it. Does that funnel developers into building property to rent rather than property to buy?
Well, we have seen that the large, for the first time ever last year, and I have it in my notes here somewhere, we built more units for rent than we did houses for sale last year. So we built over 9,000 units for rent versus 8,000 homes that come to the market for sale. Now, to be fair, out of those 9,000 units, some of them will be social housing. The likes of Respond are probably the biggest house builder in the country at the moment, building 1,500 apartments, and they will be for social housing. But, you know, it's a sea change in the way we do things in Ireland, given our financial reliance. It's not an emotional reliance on home ownership, it's a financial reliance on home ownership. You know, so each one of us listening to the programme here today is worth on average €200,000, okay, on average. If we look at homeowners are worth €300,000 and renters are worth €5,000. So there's a huge financial gain to be had from being a homeowner. But yet all the eggs are being put in the basket of the private rental sector to provide more housing than actually houses for sale.
That would suggest then that more apartments are being built, but developers will tell you it's too expensive for them to build apartments. They don't get the return.
Yeah, and the only people then who can build apartments are these large institutional funds who come in and they can blow everybody else out of the water who's bidding for the land because they have deep pockets, and they build apartments exclusively for rent. So on sites where I would argue that we should have medium to high density housing for sale, we have apartments for rent. Mm-hmm. And of course, because they're expensive to build and because of the nature of the funds and their activities, you know, these are quite often out of the reach of your average household on an average.
So just coming back then to the smaller landlords, and we've heard so much about the smaller landlords, the mom and pop landlords, as they have been called. How do we keep those people in the market? I'm not talking about the ones you referred to who've already made their decision that they're out
they're gone,
right? The people who might be wavering at the moment, because there have been calls for more incentives to be given to them. Back at budget time, we heard that too. Should that happen?
Well, see, this is where it goes back to the point about what kind of future do we want for our rental sector? And do we want to move towards a European norm? Or are we happy to have a rental sector that's full of, you know, the small landlords? Most countries, landlords are, like in France, it's 95% small landlords. In Ireland, it's, you know, 85% small landlords. And it seems to function quite well. If you want, so there are people who have made up their mind, they're gone. If you want to encourage the next generation in, I think there's a couple of things you can do. One, you need to increase security of tenure for tenants. So the ban on the no-fault evictions, it should be brought into legislation without a doubt. At the same time, it's not right when you have small landlords paying over 50% tax on the rental income when they're looking at the large institutional funds who are also landlords paying close to zero tax on their rental income. So I think the tax situation for small landlords, and I'm not here to advocate for small landlords or large landlords or anybody else, I think we should, you know, one of the four principles from Adam Smith on, you know, on taxation back in the 1780s is fairness. You know, you can't have a small landlord looking at a large landlord going, why is half my rental income gone, and when they're paying close to zero? Mm-hmm. So I think we need equity around the tax treatment.
And quid pro quo on that is that they would do security of tenure in return.
Absolutely. And like, eventually we'll get to the stage where Claiborne is my tenant and I'm selling the property. Claiborne, it makes no difference to you because you're just paying the rent into a different bank account.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Okay.
The same as in the commercial market.
All right. Well, Lorcan, you're going to stay with us. Lorcan Sir, Senior Lecturer in Housing and Real Estate, is going to stay with us for our next conversation, because listening to all of that, we have John Cummins, Fine Gael Senator and Party Spokesperson on Housing, and Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, Matt Carthy. And thank you both for joining us on the programme this morning. Matt Carthy, just to come to the eviction ban first, one of the arguments is that if you extend it into next year, when you get to the point where you said you were going to lift it, you can't do it then either. I mean, are you certain that you would advocate lifting the ban at the end of the year?
If we take the approach that the government have taken for the past number of months, then yes, Claire, we would be in that position. And that's why a simple extension of the eviction ban isn't what Sinn Féin are calling for. We're calling for the eviction ban to be extended because we know that if it's not, families are going to be made homeless next month. And that's going to have devastating impact for them, and it's going to have societal implications for a long time to come. It'll be the first time in my memory where TDs and government have made a conscious decision, knowing that the outworkings of that is to increase the homelessness numbers.
So but under your plan, that would happen at a really bad time of the year, just after Christmas or into January?
No, because what our plan is to extend the eviction ban and then do what we called on government to do when we called on them to introduce the eviction ban in the first place. And that's put in place the emergency measures that will ensure that we don't end up putting families into homelessness. Last October, Owen O'Brien on behalf of Sinn Féin wrote to Dara O'Brien outlining what those emergency measures that needed to be put in place were. We did it again 2 weeks ago. They include measures like changing the tenant and situ scheme rules to ensure that councils can purchase properties at a rate and at a speed that is required. It's about eliminating the bureaucracy that's in place. It's using emergency planning and procurement powers to deliver additional affordable houses, targeting vacant derelict properties, using new building technologies, all of those things that are required. And then, of course, we have to use the space of the eviction ban to actually set out a big housing plan in recognition that the government's current housing plan isn't working. Whatever metrics you use, house prices, rents, homelessness figures, all are going in the absolute wrong direction. And government seem to be the only set of individuals in this country that don't recognise the crisis that we're in. But as an immediate first step, we have to extend the eviction ban in order to get all those other things in place.
OK, so John Cummins, I'll bring you in on this point because you're in a politically sticky position now on this vote. That's the least of it, though, because as Laura Kinsella mentioned earlier, we have had all of these housing charities come out and people who work in the sector saying this is going to be an absolute disaster. They don't know where they're going to tell people to go. And still, the government, you and your colleagues are saying, we're going ahead.
Well, look, all parties and none supported the legislation that was introduced in October. That said that the moratorium will come to an end at the end of March and be lifted on a phased basis through to the 18th of June.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people who voted for it at that point, John, thought that you were going to do something in the interim period.
But And that's why we have been doing the very things that Matt has referred to. We've 600 additional lease units. We've bought 500 extra units. We brought 1,500 voids back into use. There's 500 additional emergency beds, 150 cold weather beds. We've extended the minimum notice period. So it's not true to say that government hasn't been taking action in that intervening period. And the tenants in situ policy is in place. There's over 367 of them were completed last year. There are 634 currently in process, and we have a target now of 1,500 of those for the calendar year 2023 in order to purchase so that the tenant can remain in situ and the local authority pays market value for that. That's the very thing that Matt just outlined right there.
Mm-hmm. And Lorcan has been telling us about tax changes, how that might help. Is that on the agenda? Should it be, John, for landlords?
Well, look, I've spoken on your programme before, Claire, to say that I think that should certainly be on the table. You know, you can't have tenants without landlords. I think it's unfortunate the way the debate has kind of gone in recent times that we're pitting one against the other, because the vast majority of tenants and landlords get on exceptionally well. There's only 1% of tenancies that end in dispute. But yes, tax is something that is cited by landlords that have left the market. It's something that is cited by landlords that are considering leaving the market. Okay. And I think the sooner that we introduce those changes, the better.
Matt Carthy, what's your position on that? Laura Kinsella says at the very least there should be fairness across the board, that institutional landlords who are taxed very lightly when it comes to rent, that the smaller landlords should get the same treatment. What do you say?
Well, actually, in the first instance, the sweetheart deals that government put in place for institutional investors must come to an end. I think many people are still flabbergasted to hear that institutional investors pay precisely zero tax on rental income, that they're exempt from capital gains tax. These are measures that were put in place by Fine Gael, and I'm sure plenty of people who are trying to source their first home would be aghast to think that they are the type of measures that government are willing to put
in
place.
So you're saying, tax the big corporations as much as you tax the small landlords? And if you're saying that, how does that keep the small landlord in the game?
So there's two types of investors. There are institutional investors. Institutional investors should be taxed the same way as other companies are in terms of their income. And in terms of individual landlords, we have to look at the government's own tax strategy group, which comprised of experts from the various government departments and experts in the field. And this was only last summer. They examined this matter in detail. And they analysed that the main reason for landlords leaving the market is house prices, and understandably so, and that no tax measure will stop that. So yes, there needs to be a level of fairness. Absolutely, I agree with Lorcan.
Yeah, but you're coming into this in a different way. You're saying tax the institutional landlords to the hilt and the small landlords to the hilt.
what I'm saying is we need to prioritise the urgency, which is now, which is providing houses for people who need them. The taxation system and this pitting of landlords against tenants hasn't been created by anybody other than government. And just to be clear, the vote in the Dáil this week isn't about landlords versus tenants. This is about government enacting measures that will make tenants homelessness.
John, why did you object there?
Because Sinn Féin and other opposition parties have vilified landlords in this country over the last number of years. Now they're giving out that landlords are leaving the market. We can't have tenants without landlords. It is a fact that Sinn Féin's budget in September, their alternative budget, proposed to put an additional €400 tax on landlords. Now, that's not going to keep more landlords in the market. And it is a fact also that Sinn Féin are opposed to the Help to Buy scheme that has helped 36,000 individuals and families to get their foot on the property ladder. And they would be aghast that Sinn Féin are looking to withdraw the very support that has assisted them to get their foot on that ladder.
Matt?
The difficulty with government measures, including the Help to Buy scheme, is what they've actually done is drive up house prices. What Sinn Féin have put in place are measures that will actually allow people to be able to purchase their own home. When we're talking about landlords, and everybody recognises they provide a service, and nobody vilifies landlords, apart from bad landlords, that is, and there is a minority of them, of course. But we have to recognise their tax burden has actually decreased over the past decade. For example, government provided and changed the rules so that mortgage interest relief for landlords is at 100%. They can write down their interest rates entirely against their tax bill. The same parties of government are refusing to support Sinn Féin's calls for a fraction of that to be provided for homeowners who are living in their homes, who are at their at really serious risk of financial stress because of rising interest rates. So we have to look again at the tax strategy group, again a government department that put in place that examined this matter, and it recognised where the failings lie in terms of the difficulties that we have with landlords in the market. But what we need more than anything is actually a functional housing system, and this government is proving itself incapable of delivering that. In terms of emergency accommodation, we know that several local authorities have told us that they have provisions in place. So when people receive their eviction notice, as a result of the decision that John's colleagues will make in the Dáil this week, they will have nowhere to go. And when they go to the local authorities, they will be told that there is nowhere for them to go. So this is the question that John needs to ask. When people in his constituency receive their eviction notice, when they call to him, where will he tell them to go?
That they're serious about housing. Matt and his party seriously say that they're serious about housing. They objected to the Land Development Agency. They voted against the Affordable Housing Bill, which established the Local Authority for Affordable Purchase Scheme. It established cost rental. It introduced the First Home Shared Equity Scheme. And as I said, they're against the Help to Buy scheme. These are all things that are actually helping people to move from the rental market into permanent home ownership. And Sinn Féin have opposed every single one of them.
So when
John, just on Lorcan's point earlier, that the strategy seems to be in this country that we're driving people into private tenancies. We're driving people into use the HAP system, and therefore, as a result, increasing rents.
Well, that's not actually the strategy, and I heard Lorcan refer to page 32 of Housing for All. What page 32 actually refers to, and it's in the same bracket, private rental and private ownership houses. Okay, so Lorcan has taken all of the figure that's been applied.
Well, he's here, so you can have it out with him.
Private ownership. You've taken all of them together, haven't you, Lorcan? John,
it's not me who conflated the two figures. It's the civil servants who conflated the two figures.
Let me finish the figure that you actually said there, Lorcan.
Do you mind not speaking over me for a second, John? So really, what happened is your plan conflates, conveniently for you, private rent and private ownership. Your civil servants were asked at the press conference when this was launched, what's the breakdown between private rent and private ownership, and they answered 2/3, 1/3. So they're the figures, they're your figures, they're your civil servants' figures. So, like, don't be accusing me of conflating figures. It's in your document that the two things are conflated. And if you are transparent, you would have split the two of them out.
But it is that they are combined, and the very schemes that I've just outlined in reference to Matt, they are in relation to the affordable purchase scheme, cost rental, the first home shared equity scheme, the help to buy scheme. They are all schemes that are aimed at promoting home ownership in this country, because that's
can
what
I suggest,
the government wants
Claire,
to do.
Matt,
can I suggest we look at? Can I suggest we look at the evidence? Because John is talking about a number of pity schemes in the overall scheme of things that government
have introduced. Well, you tell that to the people that have used those to purchase homes.
John, if you allow someone
to
finish the sentence, if you could allow me to finish, John. All of those schemes have been introduced. What's the evidence? There is a lower rate of home ownership. There is an entire generation that believe that they will never be able to own their own home as a result, as long as Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are in government. Every metric by which you can judge these matters, house prices, rent levels, homelessness figures, all are going in the wrong direction. And rather than talk about these schemes that simply haven't worked, let's look at the policy alternatives that Sinn Féin have put forward, which governments have rejected time and time again.
Wants to come back in here. Matt and John, if I can just stop you there for a moment. Thank you. Laura can go ahead.
So just some actual facts. I believe the two politicians are from Waterford and Monaghan. In Waterford last year, there was just 239 new houses built for a population of 127,000 people. In Monaghan, it was 38 new houses for a population of 61. So help to buy schemes, to be honest with you, are not much good in the face of low housing output coming to the market for sale. And last year in Waterford, in the first 9 months last year in Waterford, you know, you built 37 social houses, and in Monaghan that number was 36. So, you know, all
that's
these.
That's not actually.
They're from the Department of Housing. They're from the Department of Housing, yeah. John. So
and,
from your
and,
own
and
website.
And doesn't include AHB figures, doesn't include figures
ones new
that
build.
Have been brought back in.
It is new build figures, could, John, on the Department of Housing's website.
Larkin, if I could actually make a point. It doesn't include all of the other excellent schemes that Waterford City and County Council have implemented, like the repair and lease scheme, which has brought 300 derelict and vacant units back into use for social housing purposes. It also doesn't reference any of the LDA figures, 91 affordable purchase units that are open for application.
Well,
they
are new homes
and
social homes. They are exactly what Lorcan Sir says they are. They are other schemes that you're talking about. So he's factually correct. Just before I let you go, Lorcan, on what Matt Carthy was saying about tax when it comes to landlords. So he's talking about lifting the institutional investors' tax burden to come somewhere close or meet the small landlords. Will that solve anything?
I think what you find in the most regulated rental markets, regulation doesn't drive landlords out of the market. Income does, you know, and being able to get a good income. So I think I would equate the two of them. I think all rental income should be treated as business income.
Okay, but should they be down? They should be down, bringing them all down. Okay,
be up, yeah.
We're going to leave it there, but thank you all very much. That's Lorcan Sir, Matt Carthy and John Commons. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.